It's time for Coordinator's Corner, only on your 24/7 audio home of the Pittsburgh Steelers, SNR. Now, here's Adam Crowley.
Welcome in to another edition of Coordinator's Corner right here on your 24/7 home of the Pittsburgh Steelers, SNR. It is Adam Crowley with you, joined momentarily by Missy Matthews of Steelers.com and Bob Labriola of Steelers Digest and Steelers.com. Going to hear from each of the three Steelers coordinators, and in the first segment, going to hear from Steelers defensive coordinator Keith Butler. You would think, with the way the Steelers defense has played the last 4 weeks, that everything will be positive coming out of Keith's mouth. Well, there was one drive in particular that irritated not only the Steelers defensive players, but also Keith Butler as well. Here's Missy Matthews with Steelers defensive coordinator Keith Butler.
All right, Coach Butler, we will start with your unit, the defensive players in the locker room. They just won four in a row in Buffalo. Good win. They were able to help contain Shady McCoy, and a lot of them were ticked off. They weren't happy of what transpired late in that game.
Do you feel
the same?
Yeah, I did. I felt the same way they did. We gave up some stuff there at the end that we shouldn't have given up. You know, we went into the game talking about having our tackling be as good as we could with our tackling, and we missed 17 tackles. Hurt us at the end of the game, and we gave up some stuff we shouldn't have given up. Nobody wants to give up 20 points or anything like that. We ended up doing that. That was disappointing to us at the time. The good thing they did is they did a real good job of swarming to the ball, and that saved us a little bit on some occasions when we missed tackles, but on other occasions it hurt us. Not swarming the ball, but missed tackles did. So those are the things that we gotta take care of at the end. You know, we gotta finish out games, and you know, if we don't, something could happen to us, like happened to us against Dallas. You know, we gotta finish out that game. Had the opportunity to finish out that game, we didn't. We made some mistakes in critical situations. So It was a good win. Our guys did a great job in terms of containing a run and containing the quarterback. We were concerned about him scrambling and them picking up a lot of rush yardage from him scrambling. Our guys did a good job with that in terms of keeping him hemmed in and giving him, we didn't give him lanes to get out and go and stuff like that. So they did a good job. Those two things we did well. The other stuff we got to do a lot better.
The missed tackles, was that just mental errors? What was going on when you're playing such a good game and then you have some big chunks? There was that 40-yard catch and 40-yard run.
Right. The 40-yard run was just a mistake in fits. Right before the end of the half. You know, that was something we shouldn't have given up. We were in a decent defense. We just didn't we weren't in the right gap that we should have been in. And that hurt us a little bit, but, they didn't get us. They didn't score anything off of it at that point in time. But the pass, when you get a pass like that, you got an opportunity to intercept the pass. We missed the interception. The guy caught the ball. Then we have two guys on him, and we knock each other off of him, and he walks in for a touchdown. We've got to do better than that. We got to make those plays when we have the opportunity to do it. We made a couple plays here in the game here and there. We sacked the guy, five times. That was all good. We had the opportunity to sack him probably three more times, and we didn't get him. So we got to finish that part of our game out.
You mentioned the sacks, five of them. Two of them came from Bud Dupree. What type of game did he have?
Bud had a real good game. He missed a tackle there in the end, but he got up and got after him and made the tackle there at the end too. So he did a good job in terms of getting to the ball carrier and being disruptive and stuff like that. I think he'll tell you he felt a lot better as the game went along. He was playing well, and Debo was playing well. So our outside guys were playing well, so they played the game. And hopefully we can get better this coming week. I mean, every week the opponent, it gets a little bit more intense because of where we're at and the hunt for the playoff.
Now, was it a plan of going into the game that you were going to try to stick with Bud and Debo and not have a rotation, or were they just playing so well it made sense to keep them in?
We wanted to see how they did, when they went in, and they were playing well, so we didn't make any changes. And they didn't seem to get tired. They hustled the whole game. So, if they're not getting tired or anything like that, then we figured that those were the two best guys we could put in there at that point in time.
What's the one thing that you take away from that Bills game that you really liked in terms of what the defense did as a group, as a unit, that showed continuity?
I think we swarmed to the ball. I think they really were up for this game, as we're going to have to be for the last three games. They understand. Our guys understand the significance of the games that we're playing and the opportunity that we have in terms of the games we're playing. So if we can just, play as well as we can and win these next three ball games, then we'll be in the playoffs. So we kind of control our own path to the playoffs if we can do the things that we need to do. One of them is we've got to get better at tackling, and we got to have our head in the game, and we got to be ready to go. So I think they're ready to go, and I think their head's in the game, but we got to just be a little bit better tackling team than we have been.
I know when the Steelers' offense is on the field, you're busy doing stuff on the sideline, but at any point in Buffalo, do you just get a chance to admire Le'Veon Bell and what he was able to do?
Oh, yeah. I saw a lot of his runs. I didn't
see. Glad he's on your team?
Yeah, I am, because he's very patient. He's a very patient runner. He lets the holes develop. And then he'll take them, and sometimes he'll just take them. He's got a real good feel for the running game. He understands where he should be, where the blockings are coming, blocking is coming from, and how to set up blocks and stuff like that. So, yeah, I'm glad we got him.
I know you guys talk a lot about how seven shots helps offense and defense, something you guys do regularly in practice. Mm-hmm. Does your defense going against Le'Veon in practice help?
Yeah, because, even our DBs have trouble covering him. He's a dual threat. He's not just a running threat. He's a passing threat also. So they get him out down there in seven shots and go a little bit of empty sets with him. And even if we get our DBs on him, it don't matter. It doesn't mean we're going to shut him down.
Right.
So it's good for us to have him out there. Good for us to have Ben out there too, the same thing. Getting their best from our offense, and hopefully we can see if we can shut people down. We didn't shut anybody down in the Bills game. That was the other disappointing thing, too, is the red zone. We should have done better than we did in the red zone.
Moving on to the Cincinnati Bengals, as you said, everybody knows what's at stake here. But how different are they from when you guys faced them week two, which feels like forever ago, to right now?
I think Dalton is playing better. I think he's improved his play. I think if you look at the games that we've got scouted, that he's played well in all those games. He don't make a whole lot of mistakes. They're doing a good job of running the ball and doing a good job of maintaining without A.J. Green. Eifert is playing well for him. Their running backs are playing well for him. They're doing a good job. It's going to be a tough game. This will be a harder opponent than our last opponent, as was the Bills, a harder opponent than the opponent before them. So it's good for us in that we're playing better teams each and every week. And if we can improve, then it will prepare us for what we need to do.
In terms of A.J. Green, there's reports he could practice some this week.
Right.
He could possibly play Sunday. Is it harder or easier to game plan with or without him?
Well, we know what they got. They know us well. We know them well. I don't know if we're going to do anything they hadn't seen us do.
Vice
I don't know
versa.
If they're going to, same thing. So it's really more about how we detail our work going into this week and knowing exactly what we want to do and knowing what they do and making sure our techniques are right, our reactions are right. Our communication is right. And so we've got to make sure that's down when we go into this football game.
All right. Best of luck. Thanks so much for your time.
Thank you.
That's Steelers defensive coordinator Keith Butler. Coming up next, we'll hear from Steelers special teams coordinator Danny Smith. That's coming up right after the break on your 24/7 home of the Pittsburgh Steelers, SNR.
For some, football is a hobby. For Tunch Ilkin and Craig Wolfley, football is a lifestyle.
And the Steelers and the crowd are celebrating.
Get behind the walls of the UPMC Rooney Sports Complex and into the locker room with Tunch and Wolf for the best analysis that this town has to offer. Weekdays from 10 to 2, Tunch and Wolf give you a unique perspective that only two former Steelers can provide as they break down last week's game and look ahead to the next Steelers foe. SNR, available on the iHeartRadio app. It's time for Coordinator's Corner, only on your 24/7 audio home of the Pittsburgh Steelers, SNR. Now, here's Adam Crowley.
Rolling along on another edition of Coordinator's Corner here on SNR. We just heard from Steelers defensive coordinator Keith Butler. Now time to hear from Steelers special teams coordinator Danny Smith, chatting with our very own Bob Labriola from Steelers Digest, Steelers.com, and the Steelers Radio Network.
I want to start off with going through the scenario you guys had last Sunday in Buffalo. Okay, you have two kickers. And it's going to be a pregame decision. Mike Tomlin had said if Chris Boswell is healthy, he's kicking. So what are you going through pregame in terms of what you're looking for to hear from Boswell or see from Boswell, or how's that work?
You know, I thought it was a great move by Mike. I really did. I thought, you know, and it was his decision, and I thought he did a great job involving both kickers, you know, because, you know, Boz is coming off an injury. We thought he was fine. He practiced fine all week. And then you get up there and you got some slippery conditions and some things like that that can occur. So all we did really was protect ourselves in that environment, which you can. And it was smart on his part to pull that off.
Was he, Boswell, though, you were talking to him, you had to be, pregame. I mean, was he feeling okay? Were you watching him? Did he look okay? I mean, what did he pass?
Well, to be quite honest with you, I mean, yes, he was, and he was fine. And he didn't like the idea, and I'm glad he didn't like the idea. And that's a competitor in all of us, you know. When a guy that replaces you for a game goes 3 for 3 and an extra point and scores more points than anybody in the game, 10 points, you know, the previous week, maybe you get a little healthier, a little quicker at that position, because we don't have a right and a left kicker. We got a kicker. So, you know, Boz was set to come back, practiced well that week, and showed me his competitiveness, which we like about him. And he came out, and he said he was fine, and he proved that he was, and he played very well.
With a guy like that who's coming back from an injury, do you ask him how he's feeling, or you just leave that alone, and if he doesn't come to you and say, you know what I mean?
Kind of, I think it all depends on the relationship you have with him, and it is important to me. If I trust the guy, I ask him how he's feeling. If I don't trust a guy, I don't give a damn how he's feeling, and we'll make that decision. And you have guys that you trust and guys that you don't, and I trust him very, very much. And so I was in constant conversation with him and watching him and, you know, asking him to do certain things to prove those things. And we have a great relationship, and he was very upfront and honest about it, as it was, you know, us. And that's the only way we operate, and it all worked out great.
I want to ask you about a couple of rules kind of things from the games over the weekend. Baltimore, New England, Monday night. A guy hurdles the long snapper, blocks a field goal. Okay, what's the rule there? What do you like?
Well, there's a couple of things involved in there. You know, I mean, you get a tip, and it's all about timing. I mean, you know, and Troy Polamalu invented that before it was, you know, cool, and now people are, you know, taking off with it. But he, you're not allowed in the framework of the center's body at the snap of the ball. That's an illegal formation. That's a 5-yard penalty. Can be a first down in a situation if that field goal, you know, on a PAT, it would go on to kickoff. If it's on a field goal and it's 4th and 5 or less, you can get the offensive first down. So you're not allowed in a framework of the snapper at the snap of the ball. So the timing is critically important.
Tell me just, what's framework?
Shoulder pad to shoulder pad.
And then how far away do you have to be?
Well, I mean, the determining thing is, you know, you get officials that do different ways. They say a healthy 2 yards, okay? They say not within the feet of the down D lineman. Okay. So if the D lineman is in a 4-point stance, you're not allowed inside his feet, okay, to block it. So the timing, you know, on that is critical. The second phase of it is you're not allowed to touch a guy. If you touch a guy now, okay, it used to be you had to get elevation off of that, you know, like he had to raise up or you had to elevate yourself off of him, things like that. That was illegal. Well, now it's simply a touch. So if he raises up and touches you, then it's also a foul.
So it's that would be the foul on the guy trying to jump up.
Correct.
Okay, so and if you're now, let's just flip it over. You're the kicking team. You're attempting the field goal. Is there anything that tells you that might be coming, and what are you supposed to do?
Yeah, there's two things. Alignment tells you, number one. And number two, you have to adjust your timing. You know, the whole key to that play is a timing effect. And if you sit in the same timing, sit in the same timing, sit in the same timing, people can time on it if they study film. And so you have to change up your timing.
Okay, another play out of that game. It was at the end of the game, it was an onside kick attempt. Now, the place kicker approaches the ball from one direction, like he's going to, you know, let's just say kick to the left. And when he gets to the ball, he runs around the front of it and then to the other direction and kicks it to the right. He crossed though in front of the ball. Why is that not offsides?
Kickers are never offsides. Two people are never offsides on a kickoff. You know, kickers are offsides every time they onside kick. Their plant foot is ahead of the ball. And that's why it originated years ago. Kickers are never offside. Another situation is holders aren't offside. So if, you know, you're in a winning condition and you bring a guy in to hold the ball, sometimes those guys are offside by alignment, and it's legal. A kicker is not offside, nor is a holder. So okay. It's a legal play.
We started talking about your place kickers last Sunday. One of them was Randy Bullock. You mentioned he scored more points in that Giants game than anybody else, 10 points. Now he plays for the rival Bengals, and that's the team you're playing this week. How do you feel about that?
Well, I mean, to be honest with you, I feel good for the kid. He's a good kid. He came in here and did a job for us, and I respect him for that. I had him years ago in the Senior Bowl, so I know him fairly well. And he came in here, and he was a real pro and handled his business and did a good job. On the other hand, you know, I'm sorry that I worked with him on a couple of issues that he was having that I think helped him a little bit. I'm sorry that he's playing for the opposing team this week. To be honest with you, I hope he has the worst kicking day of his career.
The Bengals have kind of gotten away from Pac-Man Jones as their primary returner. The guy now that they use is Alex Erickson. Both punt returns and kickoff returns, he leads them both in average and in number. What can you tell me about
him? He's excellent. He's done a great job. I mean, he really has. He's very, very consistent. He's solid as a rock. You know, we played Brandon Tate a week ago, and he's the guy that replaced him. I expressed my feelings about Tate a week ago. This kid is, you know, come back at you kind of guy. He's a tough guy. He's got good enough speed. He's had some long runs, you know, in both phases. I think he's excellent. We're going to have to be on point to slow him down and to control him.
That's Steelers special teams coordinator Danny Smith. When we come back, we'll hear from Steelers offensive coordinator Todd Haley. The Steelers certainly have something going on that side of the ball, as even though Ben Roethlisberger did not play his best game of the season, three interceptions, the Steelers' offense was still able to put 27 points up on the board, and they were able to run the ball at will against those Buffalo Bills. We'll come back and hear from Todd Haley next. It's Coordinator's Corner on SNR.
For some, football is a hobby. For Tunch Ilkin and Craig Wolfley, football is a lifestyle.
And the Steelers and the crowd celebrating.
Get behind the walls of the UPMC Rooney Sports Complex and into the locker room with Tunch and Wolf for the best analysis that this town has to offer. Weekdays from 10 to 2, Tunch and Wolf give you a unique perspective that only two former Steelers can provide as they break down last week's game and look ahead to the next Steelers foe. SNR, available on the iHeartRadio app. It's time for Coordinator's Corner, only on your 24-7 audio home of the Pittsburgh Steelers, SNR. Now, here's Adam Crowley.
We've heard from Danny Smith. We've heard from Keith Butler. Last but not least, Steelers offensive coordinator Todd Haley. The running game sure has picked up recently, huh? Some good news yesterday as Ramon Foster was able to practice. That's good news. B.J. Finney as well. Steelers should have their full complement of weapons, including maybe D'Angelo Williams, who practiced for the first time in full in 6 weeks. Here's Steelers offensive coordinator Todd Haley talking with our man Bob Labriola from Steelers Digest and Steelers.com.
Todd, Le'Veon Bell had a great day in Buffalo, was named AFC Offensive Player of the Week on Wednesday in recognition. But there were a lot of guys who contributed to his success. Give me one of the unsung heroes of Le'Veon setting a single-game franchise rushing record.
Well, there's a number. I mean, Roosevelt Nix, you know, who last year obviously helped us a bunch, got hurt late in the year. You know, he's back to full strength, and he gives us a physical presence at the fullback, which I think really gives us a little bit of attitude. B.J. Finney, you know, being in there, did a great job for starting on the road. He was involved in a lot of the in the mix, you know, pulling different directions and blocking, you know, a number one pick, you know, a high number one pick in Darius. So, you know, there's probably too many to mention, but the guys up front, including the tight ends and backs and the receivers, did a great job.
You mentioned Rosie Nix, and you don't see a lot of fullbacks certainly coming out of college football or even around the NFL anymore. How difficult are those guys to find?
Well, you got to find them in other places because you don't see fullbacks, period, you know, in today's college football with the spread. You know, so it's guys like Rosie that played other positions, you know, defensive line, you know, in college. So, you know, our scouting department, Kevin and those guys and Coach T, you know, they spotted a guy that had the build of a fullback and the attitude of a fullback, and he's done a very good job for us.
Against the Bills, Le'Veon had rushing touchdowns of 3, 7, and 5 yards. What does that do to a red zone defense when an offense can run the ball across the goal line from in close like that?
Well, it's huge. It breaks your spirit. You know, most defenses in this league, if not all, you know, that's their red zone mantra is, you know, don't let them run it in. And to run it in and from where we ran it in, especially the longer one early was – you know, those are backbreakers for a defense and will breakers. And, you know, I thought it paid dividends as the game went on. You know, they had a hard time stopping us in general.
When something is working really well, a particular play, how many times can you run it in a row in the NFL but without it biting you in the butt?
It depends what team. You know, some teams like Cincinnati we're playing this week, they – you know, once they see a play, it's hard to get it again. So you got to have some creativity and some foresight. But, you know, 2, 3 at the max. You know, we got a couple of those plays 2, 3 times that were big gainers and big plays for us. So I think it all depends on who you're playing.
As a coaching tool, do you generally go over all interceptions and assess responsibility for each one?
Yeah, absolutely.
So in your experience, just as a general rule, who's mostly responsible for interceptions? Is there is it usually the quarterback? Is it usually the receiver?
It depends what quarterback it is, and it depends the situation. But, you know, I think it's important to go through that process because there's always it's usually little things that could be done better with more detail, and you can eliminate the bad plays.
You played the Bengals week 2, I think it was. Are they much different now?
No, they've stayed relatively healthy. They look like they're playing better, you know, as a defense here the last few weeks especially. They've done a good job against the run, and they're doing a good job in the secondary. They're a very good defense. The ranking may be a little misleading how some of their games have gone, but you know, it again with them, it always starts up front and with those defensive ends specifically because you're, you know, a 4-3 defense and that's the premier matchup, tight ends and defensive ends. Geno Atkins, it looks like he's fully back to health now. That was a pretty bad injury he had a couple years ago, and it takes time to get back, but he looks like he's his disruptive self. You know, another guy that's very critical when you're playing these guys, along with 55.
Okay, 55, Vontaze Burfict. A lot of talk about him has to do with the extracurriculars he finds himself involved in. But ignoring all of that, what kind of player is he?
He's a great player. Really a great player. Big, fast, strong, instinctual. Finds his way to the football a lot. You know, as far as the other stuff, it's up to us. You know, whoever's called upon each play to block him, they got to make sure they're finishing to the whistle and not allowing any of that after the whistle stuff to happen.
One guy on the Bengals defense you don't hear much about is George Iloka. He's a safety. He's, which you know, he's tied for their team lead in interceptions. What kind of player is he?
He's unique. You know, he's so tall for a safety. You just don't see guys that big back there. You know, and with Reggie Nelson gone from Cincinnati, who was kind of their quarterback, I think George has taken over that role. You know, he's doing a lot of things that Reggie was asked to do, so you see him all over the field. And because of his size and length, he covers a lot of ground. You know, he's hard to throw over or around for sure. And he's a physical guy that's not afraid to come up and tackle. Generally, tall guys like that can't break down to make the tackles, but he's a little different than most tall guys.
How do you feel about the way the offense is playing generally at this point?
I'm happy about a lot of things. You know, obviously the running the football here of late has really come along. You know, the cohesion between the offensive line, having everybody healthy, knock on wood. The addition of Chris Hubbard coming in on a bunch of plays and being an added force in there, along with the cohesion between the running backs, Le'Veon namely, obviously. So, you know, that part of it's good. We're moving the football. You know, the negative, but it's a positive in my mind is, you know, we got three games to go in this quarter, and we haven't played to our potential yet. We've still been able to put ourselves in a decent spot as of now. So, you know, our charge is going to be, you know, playing to our maximizing our potential down the stretch. And I think if we do that, we'll be able to make some noise.
Is there one thing that's keeping you from that potential in your mind?
Not one specific thing. It's still for us. It's young guys coming along, and we're pushing them hard. You know, the young guys that are trying to fit in and find their role, understanding everything we're trying to get done, and those little details.
Good luck Sunday.
Thank you.
That's Steelers offensive coordinator Todd Haley with Bob Labriola. That's going to do it for this week's edition of Coordinator's Corner. Next week, the Steelers will get prepared to take on the Baltimore Ravens. Christmas Day, we'll have another edition of Coordinator's Corner on Thursday prior to that matchup. Thanks so much for listening to Coordinator's Corner on SNR. Corner on SNR. Corner on SNR. Corner on SNR.